Hello and welcome into Sight and Sound Technologies podcast. This is episode number 3 and I'm Stuart Lawler. As always, we're coming to you from Sight and Sound Technologies Dublin office. Thank you for downloading and subscribing to our podcast. It's November, and you know something? It's thoroughly winter, miserable weather out there. Wind and rain. It's one of those days that you know when you go out, you're going to get absolutely soaked. There's no getting away from it. Stay with us for the next 50 or so minutes because I'll be talking to Matt Pateman. Matt's our training and tech support manager here at Sight and Sound. He'll be telling us all about what he does. And Brian Harchton from Harchton Consultancy is along to talk to us about his company and his product portfolio. That's all coming up on this edition of Sight and Sound Technologies Podcast. Now, starting us off this month, thank you to everybody who's been getting in touch to tell us how much they're enjoying our new podcast. Great to hear from Stuart Beveridge in Scotland and Robin Jennings and Kevin Russell. Guys, thank you so much for your emails. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, if you've anything to say about the program or you'd like to get involved or you have suggestions or criticisms, all feedback is more than welcome. Send an email to podcast@sightandsound.co.uk. And remember, of course, you can also contact our office in Northampton on 01604 798 070, or if you're in Ireland, give us a call in Dublin on 01690 9720. I have to say to you, it's been a busy couple of weeks. I can't believe, I was talking to someone yesterday and we were talking about it being coming towards the end of November already. The Christmas ads are on the TV. I love the Boots Christmas ad, by the way, with the Robbie Williams cover, if you haven't seen it yet. And the John Lewis ad, a friend of mine was telling me the other day, is visually fantastic. And of course, the music of Elton John is just outstanding in that ad. I'm completely getting sidetracked here. Sorry. What I was really saying, other than telling you about my favorite Christmas ads, was what a busy couple of weeks it's been. And the 6th and 7th of November, we were at Sight Village London in the Kensington Town Hall, gorgeous part of London, and so nice to meet so many of our customers and talk about all the exciting innovations that are going on, because I don't know, it just seems a really exciting time at the moment in Sight and Sound. Lots of new and exciting things happening. And speaking of new and exciting things, actually, version 3.2 of the BrailleSense Polaris software has just been launched. This is available as an over-the-air update or as a download for offline installation. Two notable features in this update are the inclusion of third-party text-to-speech support from the Google Play Store. So, for example, you could use the Eloquence speech synthesizer if you wish. Or there are many others to choose from. Some are free and some are paid, but you can now use them as your default synthesizer on the Polaris 32 or Polaris Mini. The second major feature is a significantly enhanced navigation system for the online help within the Polaris. So grab the update if you wish, either over the air or offline. And if you have any problems, give our support team a call on in Northampton on 01604 798 070. We are always happy to help. I did tell you on the last podcast, by the way, that Jenny Axler from Hims would be talking to us this month. And this, by the way, is not because Jenny and I didn't try to do this. It's just because we couldn't get our time zones sorted out. Jenny's 9 hours ahead of Dublin. So it's been quite a challenge to do this, but we are doing it very shortly. And I can guarantee you that Jenny will be on our next podcast, which, by the way, will be the last podcast we produce before Christmas. So I'll tell my best Christmas cracker jokes, if I can find one or two. Okay, now, one of the things we wanted to do when we started this podcast was to introduce you in so much as we could to some of the people who work in Sight and Sound. And you may know these names from email conversations or telephone calls, or indeed you may have met people when you come to the stand at our exhibitions or when you were involved in some of our Sight and Sound training events. But we do want to get to know some of the people, or as many of the people as possible, as many who will talk to me, to find out what they do for Sight and Sound. And we're starting this month with Matt Pateman, who's our training and tech support manager, and who's an all-round great guy. I've had the pleasure of knowing Matt for many years, so I asked him to be my first interviewee, and he didn't even think about it. He just said, yes, of course, after I twisted his arm a little bit. So sat down in Matt's office a couple of weeks ago in Northampton, and I started by asking him when he joined the company.
I joined Sight and Sounds, believe it or not, it was late in 2001.
Okay, so you've been here for quite a while.
Yes, yeah, I even started and had a slight more hair than I have now.
Okay, fair enough. And were you, when you came in, did you have knowledge of the sort of the assistive technologies that are in here or not?
I had absolutely zero knowledge. You know, a little bit of background about me. I actually come from a small village just north of Northampton, and, you know, this sort of technology, I don't even think I'd met many disabled people at all by the time that I started this job, and it was a completely different way of thinking. You know, my sort of area that I was in before was in a first line support help desk, and all of those were sighted. So when this came up, it sort of pricked my ears up a little bit, and I was just like, that sounds really interesting.
What was it like then going into I suppose an environment where it's very different way of working, very different way of explaining things, and surrounded by a lot of technology that it probably, I guess initially you have the wow factor, and then you go, I'm going to have to use this stuff.
Yeah, I think one of the first things that happened, just to take you right back to when I, you know, my first week, it was when Mervyn Robertson was about, and one of the first things he did was actually he broke my mouse on purpose, and then said, "You now have to use keystrokes." So it was a baptism of fire a little bit, because it was like, right, okay, where do I start? What do I do? So I had a very good trainer at the time, Mr. James Everson. I still think he knows more than he will ever let on. I've never known a man keep so many keystrokes in his head.
Indeed.
But the thing was there, it really sort of focused me and said, okay, how do I get around it? What do I do? Where do I start to look as well? And back in those days, we didn't have as much available on the internet for us either.
Okay. Tell us about maybe the training that's on offer, because I know a lot of it is bespoke and is customized. If somebody is buying something from Sight and Sound, can they request training at time of purchase, or how does that kind of work?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it all depends on how the work comes through to us. If it's an access to work assessment, they would normally put some training on it anyway. If it comes to our sales guys, I think the way that we would do it is we'd have a chat with them, and it would come through from that point of view. They might even put the end user onto us, so we could have a chat and see what their requirements are, where their knowledge is lacking, and we could really just build something around them.
And you're presumably training not only in the software that somebody buys, maybe it's JAWS or Zoom Text or Fusion or something else, but I suppose you're also making sure they know how to use that software in conjunction with everything else.
Yeah, and that can be quite a hard thing. You know, we've got software that we've never used before, and we have to, as I said, quickly get a handle on what's going on and how they work as well. In any company, you know, they might do things slightly different to somebody else. So it's really looking at their need, taking a step back, having a chat with people, and then doing the training from there.
And there are some times, aren't there, and I suppose we should maybe mention this, that there are times when it can be extremely difficult to do that, because there's just so many, there are so many variables, I suppose, in terms of system compatibility, what's working with the screen reader, how the screen reader is receiving the information, or whatever the piece of assistive technology is, that, you know, sometimes maybe in spite of our best efforts, it may not be possible to just get it to that point.
Yeah, and we can only do that really with the help of manufacturers as well. Them following the governance that they have to follow to make things accessible by way of their back screens. You know, a lot of the stuff that we see from a web-based perspective, we don't get to see half the stuff that's going on behind that. So, you know, what we're seeing from a visual perspective can be completely different to what Jaws is reading to us as well. So it's really trying to get those developers to understand if they do things correctly their end, our software will have no problems whatsoever.
Okay. I was going to ask you about a typical day in your job. I suspect there isn't one, because it is in some ways so reactive. And I know from just having been around you, you're doing so much. But is there a typical day for you?
There's a typical day, I think, in the office and out of the office. Out of the office is a lot more straightforward, because normally I'll be going on site somewhere, so it's just a case of getting there. Obviously doing a bit of prep beforehand. I may know the person already, so I know how they work, and that works quite well. They know, you know, how I work, I know how they work, and we can just crack on. So it's quite nice really that way. But from a in the office perspective, you sort of get pulled around a little bit from pillar to post, not only looking after the guys in the support department, you know, new training jobs are coming in, I get involved in some sales sometimes, or speak to assessors, try and organise CPD for people. So, you know, you might come in and with all good intentions have to do one thing and end up not doing that at all that day.
And I guess maybe that's the way it works in a, you know, a relatively small company, and I've probably found this since I joined Sight & Sound, you do a bit of everything, and you have to have that flexibility, don't you?
That's right, yeah. And I think it comes with experience as well. You know, people within, you know, our admin teams or our in-house sales teams, they do look at you for a bit of guidance sometimes. And it's just really, you know, for the amount of time that we've been here and the knowledge that we have stored in our brains.
Okay. One thing I wanted to ask you was that I think lots of people who contact tech support, you know, and I've seen this because I've been involved in tech support for a long time, you know, people do so when they're maybe a little bit anxious, a little bit stressed, they need something in a hurry, they're ringing tech support because they're hoping the answer is going to be there immediately. What can people do maybe to maximize that tech support experience, to make it as easy for them and as easy for your guys as well, so that they can hopefully give them what they need as quickly as possible?
Yeah, I think information is the key. You know, we if you are getting that feedback with Jaws or any other bit of software, trying to give us as much information as to what you're doing at the time is really, really helpful. Making sure that, you know, before you call us, sometimes making sure that everything is updated and giving it another try. You know, because as we know now, Jaws is updated quite regularly. Some of the other software is updated regularly as well. And honestly, sometimes that, you know, Microsoft have updated something and it's just knocked something out. So then the manufacturers have to battle that back, and then all of a sudden it works. So it's just a case of seeing if the updates work. If they don't work, having a clear path for us of what you are trying to do, how you are going about achieving that as well, is really helpful. So some sort of walkthrough, you know, I'm going into Word, I'm doing this, or going into this particular menu, and then it's not giving me this result.
The tech support guys also have the facility here, haven't they, to remotely control your machine. So that, you know, speeds up the process at both ends.
Massively, yeah. And I say, you know, I still remember the days where we just used to have to listen to Jaws over the phone.
Same here, yeah.
And that was all
tough, very
yeah,
tough.
Yeah, absolutely, especially when somebody has it at about, you know, 300 or 400 words a minute, and I can't understand that over a crackly line.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, the remote support side has made our life a lot easier. And if we can get onto your machine, you know, not only are you giving us that information, we can see what's going on as well. So yeah, it doesn't always make it quicker, because we've got to log on to you first, but it actually makes our lives a bit easier that way. Yeah.
And I've had the pleasure of sitting with the tech support team here for a day, and those guys are incredibly busy. So it really is good to maximise the conversation and the time you have with them, just to bear those things in mind, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's never easy. You know, nobody phones up a technical support line for a chat, unfortunately. But yeah, honestly, if we can get as much info out of you as we can, you know, make it as clear as possible, and we will try our very best to make that call as, you know, quick on our end for you guys as well, because we understand how important this software is. If it's not working, that could be your day done.
Yeah.
And you know, believe me, we want you to be working as much as you possibly can be.
And just to say, because I know some people may not be at their machine, or maybe they're working as a problem with their home computer, we do have a very active email tech support service, haven't we?
Yes, absolutely. And again, the same sort of thing applies, really. You know, giving us as much information as you possibly can really helps. You know, serial numbers help as well. It could be, you know, as soon as we have a serial number, we can look at your the versions that you're on, and we might know straight away that it's sorted in a later version. So giving us all of the information you possibly can is something that is really, really helpful.
Okay, fantastic. So what is life outside of Sight and Sound like for Matt? What do you do when you're not in front of all this technology and you can kind of switch off?
Yeah, well, life is busy. I have two small children, so they keep me on my toes and running around when they are when I'm at home. Outside of the family circle, I heavily or really enjoy rugby as well. So I'm a season ticket holder down at Northampton Saints, have been since about 2003, after I retired from playing.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I came to Sight and Sound actually, and had a bit of a broken knee. So after I fixed myself up, I decided to go on the other side of the pitch and have a beer in hand and watch that way.
Sounds like a great thing to do of a Saturday afternoon, as they say.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, Matt, we really appreciate you've chatted to us, but one of the things we're going to be asking everybody as we conclude these little chats and people get to know you, what's the one piece of technology that Matt just can't be without? When you're sitting watching the rugby or you're sitting at your desk, what's the thing that kind of needs to be with you?
The main thing that with me, I'm very much a technology person, so I don't have any paper diary or anything like that. Everything is on my phone. And if that went down for any reason, I think I would be stuck. Not only has it got my work diary on it, it has my personal diary on it as well. Yeah. So I live and die by that, unfortunately. So trying to use the technology that we have available for us.
It's really interesting you say that, and I think a lot of people would say the same thing, but one of the things about the mobile phone, and I would be the same as you, I have my work diary, I have my personal diary, I have a diary that I share with my fiance, so we have any joint appointments, but I also think with our phone now we can do so much. It's like a digital office. You know, I often go places with just my phone and I can be very productive.
Yeah, I think it's scary how much you can do on it, and there may be an over-reliance somewhere, but yeah, they're good devices now, and you know, using the technology we have available to us as it stands, it's just incredible.
Are you an iPhone or an Android guy?
Unfortunately for you, Stuart, I'm an Android boy myself.
nothing wrong with that.
But I think even from the Android side, I think they've upped their game significantly.
They have, yeah.
Over the last little while, and even when I go out on site, you know, there are more people. You know, I've got some people that have picked up the Google phone. A lot are using Samsungs as well. So I think everyone's stepping their game up because they realise tapping into the, you know, accessibility market is a big market.
Absolutely, and I think it just takes one major mainstream company to do it, and suddenly they're all jumping on. So it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for people who need to use that software, but it's also a good thing for this sector.
It pushes manufacturers to be better. You could probably say that with the jaw side as well. You know, there are other screen readers available, and it's just pushing the manufacturers just to make jaws that better and keep those sales coming in.
Sure, it's a good thing. Matt, it's always great to chat to you. I've known you for a good number of years, so you were the first person we wanted to get on the podcast, so thanks for taking the time, and look forward to checking in with you occasionally in the future.
No worries, thank you very much.
If you're you're a JAWS user, you've very likely heard of JAWS scripts. The scripting language is a way to significantly increase the power of JAWS across a whole range of applications. And I think the best example of how powerful the scripting language is in JAWS can be seen in the work of Brian Harchton from Harchton Consultancy, who joins us today on our podcast. Brian, welcome to the Sight and Sound podcast.
I'm very glad to be here, and what a lovely introduction. Thank you very much.
Well, no, I'm serious. I mean, some of the stuff you do is incredible, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it and about your company and all the great things you're doing with JAWS. But maybe before we do that, just in terms of what you've done over the years, because I know you've used assistive technology for quite a while, haven't you?
For a very long time. I actually started out in the early 1980s with products like the ZX Spectrum, if anyone remembers that, or the BBC microcomputers. And what I was keen to do then was to write computer games, because everybody was playing computer games in the early 80s. Sighted people were, but there were no games for blind people. So I set about doing that. And I actually ended up with a talking Space Invader game for the ZX Spectrum, 48K.
Wow. My God.
And I just progressed on from there. And my interest in JAWS scripting really came about probably in about 2000. And I had been using JAWS for quite a number of years then, but I felt that there was a lot more that it could do that I wanted it to do. And so I set about reading a book that was written by an American guy called Ken Gould. And that is really how I got interested in JAWS scripting.
One of the things I remember, you just talk about, you know, sort of your earliest memories, because one of the things, and you've just made me think there in terms of computer games, using an IBM PS2 back in, I think, 1992, 93, playing The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was this text adventure game. So it was fantastic back then. And it just makes you realize when you start talking about your earliest memories of technology, how far we've come nowadays.
Oh, definitely. I did write some text adventure games as well back in those early days, invented the text and everything, and they were quite good for their time.
So reading this scripting book that you mentioned by Ken Gould around the year 2000 obviously got you thinking. What was the, or maybe when was the first time then that you kind of brought those thoughts into a product that worked alongside JAWS?
Well, really, probably it was about 2001. I started to distribute some scripts that I had written that I thought were particularly adequate. They would enhance productivity. I think one of the things that I did first of all was the ability to more easily select text within Microsoft Word. So I kind of based it on the old WordPerfect 5.1 for DOS. Mm-hmm. Where you would mark a block of text, the starting point, you would move to the end point, you would mark that, and the text between the two marked points was selected. And I've gone on to use various refinements of that in a number of our products over the last 18 years or so. Most probably the first thing, and then moving on to scripting some applications and making some random number games and things like that. And I thought, you know, JAWS can do much more than screen reading. This scripting engine is actually very, very powerful.
And when you mentioned that example of selecting text using the old WordPerfect 5.1 principles, which I think were called blocks, weren't they, back then?
Yes,
Alt F4, I think, was a keystroke. We're really going back here. But when you mentioned that, I suppose I'm thinking, and this has been maybe a kind of a consistent kind of maybe output of what you do, is to improve efficiency, make things easier and quicker, I suppose, for users.
Yes, that's certainly one of the things that I do quite a lot, because I think anybody can, well, not anybody, but many people can sit behind a desk and they can script and they can hope that things work out in the way that people want. But I hope that one of the strengths that we have as a company is that I actually do get out there. I go to visit people, to train people how to use JAWS, and also to script. And I think you'll know this, Stuart, when you actually train people and work with people face to face, you do get a lot of ideas. You see where people are struggling, and you can really get a sense of, how could this be better? What could I do to enhance that? And sometimes, even if it's a training job that I've been on, I've done a quick bit of scripting just to ease the workload for somebody, just to make things a little bit easier. So yes, a lot of what I have done in the past has been all about productivity.
Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. Of course, nothing beats sitting with a user in their environment where they are most hopefully relaxed, and just seeing what the problems are. Now,
that's right.
we'll talk about some of the products, because there's some really interesting stuff that you're doing. But you mentioned your company, Hartchen Consultancy. I think pretty well known at this stage. Tell us a little bit about it.
I'd like to think so, particularly overseas, ironically. We're very well known in America and Canada, for example. We're a small company based in South Wales in the UK. And what we do is completely centered around products from Vispero. So just to define that, we're talking about JAWS for Windows, Zoom Text Fusion, and the L Braille. And that in itself, I think, should tell people that the JAWS screen reader is still extremely popular, so much so that we're able to have a sustainable business model. So we offer training in its use, either through online training courses or by visiting people, as I mentioned earlier, usually at their place of work. But I would say, as we've already alluded to, the biggest strength of the company is JAWS scripting. That is programming, so that we can make different applications work in the way that they're meant to for accessibility. And the scripting part of our business, again, is in two strands. First of all, there is the part where applications are made accessible, but also we have a number of products completely centered around JAWS scripts. And I think we're one of the few companies in the world who actually do this. And one of the things I'm proudest of most, I think, is that we are actually in the UK. So this isn't something that's coming out of America. It's nice that we're actually doing something for a change.
Let's talk about some of those products in a minute. And if you don't mind, the one that I'd like to start off with, it's probably something that maybe you're not doing as much of at the moment, but I remember the very first, I think, instance of your iTunes support, I think in a program called JTunes, sometime in the mid-2000s. And I remember, you know, at the time, iTunes was an absolutely no-go area. It was completely inaccessible. You could open it with your screen reader of choice. It didn't have to be JAWS. It could be anything, and it just didn't work. And suddenly you created this magic to make the thing accessible. How do you take something that's completely unusable and make it work? What's the process like?
Well, I think some of the best things are born out of necessity, aren't they, that we do in life? And in that particular case, I'd actually got an iPod. It was a very early model. And I found that you needed iTunes to drive it. And it was completely inaccessible. And I wasn't going to take it back. I was determined to have this thing. So I set about working with it. So a lot of things that we used to be able to do are things like using the JAWS cursor to explore the screen to find out what is happening in particular situations. We could at those times use various other JAWS utilities to explore the different windows to find out what was going on. These days, it's not as easy to do that because a lot of the time that JAWS cannot detect what is going on the screen through the JAWS cursor and those other utilities that I mentioned. So you have to explore the different objects within an application to find out exactly what is going on. And there are tools within JAWS where you can do that, or I've actually written my own in some cases. I have my own sort of trade secret library, if you like, where I can actually go through all the objects of an application and find out what's meant to be happening. If I can't find it out on my own, then obviously I do need to get some visual assistance to find out what is going on, because I can't see at all. And in that event, fortunately, there is a service now called Aira, which is very helpful, and it's a subscription model, but it does give me access to a sighted assistant 24 hours a day if I want to, rather than employing a support worker. And they can work with me on the computer, find out what is happening, give me some ideas. I can take some careful notes. And if I've missed anything, I can always go back to them. But usually that is a good way of being able to explore an application. Then I can use my own scripting knowledge in order to make sure that things happen as they should. And also, to some extent, my imagination as well, and my experience of working with users to find out or to integrate what I think a user might benefit from. What sort of prompts would they like? What sort of help do they need in order to be able to use the application successfully?
And you've touched on something I was about to ask you there, because help and, I guess, that kind of in-product or inbuilt training, if I may call it that, is crucial. Because you can build a great script, have really good functions, but if the user can't access them or doesn't know how to take advantage of them, they're really useless. So you've put a lot of time, and I know from using your products, into writing some really detailed and thorough help documentation.
Thank you. Yeah, I believe that the help documentation is just as important. And by documentation, that can mean a user guide, and that's important. But it also can mean, of course, with JAWS, hotkey help with insert H, and context-sensitive help with insert F1. And to some extent, maybe audio files as well. Depends what the individual customer wants, or whether we're producing a product. And what I actually do when I have finished writing scripts or a product is I actually go through, write the documentation. I think I've explained it okay, but then in the proofreading stage, I actually go through and I look at the instructions and I go through each exercise myself, just to make sure that what I've actually written does correspond to what actually happens and what JAWS says.
So there's that testing piece as well, which is crucial.
Absolutely, yes. We do have our own beta testing teams for each of the different products. But I think if I can put myself in the perspective of an individual user, which I think I can, and go through it, then that's half the battle.
All right, so let's talk about some of the current products. I mean, I mentioned JTunes, which was way back in the day, although I know it exists in a different way now. What's current in your portfolio?
I think there are three main areas I'd like to focus on. The first is the product that we're probably best known for, and that is JSay. And what that does, put very simply, it links together JAWS for Windows and Dragon Naturally Speaking. Does a lot more than that, though. The end result is that a person can control the computer simply by speaking to it. But in order to do that, what I've had to do is to design a lot of special functions that are useful to blind people. So you can dictate text, and of course, by means of JSay, it's going to echo that text back to you. And that's important so that the blind person knows that what they've said has been successfully recognized. But I've then been through and mirrored each and every JAWS screen reading command, of which there are hundreds, with voice commands. And as I say, developed a number of other facilities. So one of the things that blind people often have difficulty with, even if they are what I'd call keyboard able, is actually navigating. When you're saving a file or you're opening a file in something like Microsoft Word, it's actually quite difficult to find where you need to save that folder if it's on a network drive in a place of work, for example. So one of the things about JSAY is that you can actually just say, save in letters or whatever it is, and it knows exactly where to put that file. So it takes a little bit of setting up initially on the part of the user, but that's just one of the facilities that we have in JSAY that goes well beyond what Dragon and Jaws can offer as single products. So I think that's the thing that we're most known for.
And I suppose on that note, speech recognition has I guess improved so much. I mean, I'm remembering days when I was exploring Dragon with other people, and I'm talking about 2000, maybe 2001, and you'd have to speak very slowly and put plenty of pauses between your words. And I've seen some demos you've produced on podcasts where you're pretty much speaking as you are to us now.
Well, that's exactly it, really. Once you develop a good dictation style, and it does, in some cases, take some training to do that, then yes, you can talk at about 160 words per minute and get some good text down. And we do have a sister product to JSAY, which is called JDictate. And that is really for productivity purposes. It doesn't give you the ability to control the computer, but what it does do is makes Dragon, naturally speaking, accessible. And we find that is used by people like social workers, lawyers, people like that who really want to use their voice to get a lot of text down day to day.
I've been really impressed, Brian, by this wonderful product you brought out, I think, four years ago, if I'm not mistaken, called Leesy. That really, I guess, it's quite unique in some ways because it's targeting the beginner and advanced user. And some people who may not have heard of this might say, how is that even possible?
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned that because that's the next thing I wanted to just spend a bit of time on. So, yes, Leesy comes in two flavors, so to speak. There is what we call Leesy Basic, and that is a menu-driven system, the prompts for which are spoken using real human narration, but it's Jaws that is driving it. And what that enables a person to do, a complete computer novice, is to carry out common tasks using a menu system, such as writing a letter, sending emails, surfing the internet, through to things like managing a simple diary and listening to the radio, that kind of thing. But it's very, very easy. All they need to know, really, to do common tasks is about the arrow keys, enter, escape, that sort of thing. But there is also Leesy Advanced, which consists of a large number of tools and services for what I would call the Jaws power user. So people who buy a Leesy really like that as well. In terms of services, for example, you can get the news, you can get the weather, you can access search engines more easily, book libraries, that sort of thing. And people also buy Leesy for its productivity tools that we've talked about before and to enhance access to applications. So to give you a couple of examples of that, Skype version 8 is something that people need to transfer to these days if they want to use Skype. And there was a general feeling on social media that it was never going to be possible for Jaws to be able to read the text chat messages with keystrokes that we've used in the past, like Control 1 through to Control 0. I've always been keen on a challenge, so I made that happen. Leesy definitely can do that. And we can use that kind of model for things in the future, like Skype for Business, that sort of thing. YouTube is another example. You can move through and pause YouTube videos just like you could operate an old-fashioned tape recorder. But there are also things for the workplace. So in Microsoft Outlook, what a lot of people do, sighted people, is they don't attach documents to email messages, perhaps in the way that we would, by using the attach file dialog. What they'll do is they will drag the attachment into the body of the email message. And if they do that, you can see why they're doing it, because the sighted person is then instantly alerted to it within the context of the text. But it does make it actually quite inaccessible. So Lisi deals with that kind of situation as well, so that if people are confronted with that sort of thing, then they can get those attachments.
You've got, I know, a lot of, I guess, to complement maybe the Lisi documentation, which is very comprehensive. You have recorded a whole series of what you call Lisi Bites. And I was listening to some of these last night in preparation for our chat today. There's loads of great stuff in there.
There is. I'd like to think so. Yes, we have these short Lisi Bites. And they do teach you how to use a specific area of the product. I think we've got about 40 now, something like that. Rather lost count, but we do have quite a lot, and there will be some more in December because we've got some new things coming up. Just lastly on Lisi, I just wanted to focus on the L Braille for a minute, because I know this is something that Sight and Sound do sell, and it is a great product, but one of the difficulties I found when I got the L Braille, and I'm an advanced JAWS user myself, is that the keystrokes to operate the L Braille are quite difficult for a person to get to grips with. If you can imagine that you've got this Braille keyboard, and actually moving around the Windows operating system is quite an arduous task. So I thought, how can we make this easier? If I was training somebody, how can we make the transition much easier? So what I did was I built a little interface, which I'll just quickly demonstrate to you. Let's see. Okay, so if I just go to, let me just go to Google here just for a second. There we go. So what we can do on the L Braille is just to press a keystroke, which is very easy to find. It's actually shift with B.
L Braille keystroke dialog, keystroke edit, computer Braille.
And now we can type in any keystroke that we want to do. So if we want the Windows key with D to go to the desktop, for example, if I just type that in, Windows space D and press enter.
Folder view, list view, Internet Explorer 34.
There we are. Wow. We've got that. Let me show you one more. Let's go back to our web page here.
Google Internet.
And if I press that keystroke again.
L Braille keystroke dialog, keystroke edit, computer Braille.
And this time I'll type a little abbreviation here, but basically what it means is insert F7 and press enter.
Links list dialog, links list view, about 1 of 9.
So you can get around the L Braille just like that. You can execute any of the JAWS screen reading commands, or you can execute a Windows command, whatever you want to do. Certainly using the inbuilt keystrokes on the L Braille is helpful, and it does speed up the productivity. But while you're getting used to that, then you can use this other special little interface here.
And of course, L Braille is just this wonderful device that is so portable and gives you access to all the functionality you would normally have in Windows 10. That L Braille support is built into Lisi, or is a separate utility?
Yes, yes.
It's built into Lisi. Okay, brilliant. So that's available in the current version of Lisi, which you can install on your L Braille.
Yes, that's right. And we do have a Lisi Byte for that.
Fantastic. So tell us, outside of the product development, which I imagine is keeping you very busy, I know you've run a number of training courses throughout the year. And I suppose you're really looking at this idea of remote training for groups of people.
Yes, that's right. It is low cost, or fairly low cost, remote training. And what we do every couple of months or so, I get together a webinar, and it is using the Zoom conferencing platform now. We started with Talking Communities, but we're using Zoom. And I try to teach a subject over several weeks that people might be interested in. And people can buy the archives of those courses if they would like to. We have 16 up there now on the website in our training area. And you can do that. Basically, what the format is that I give about 50 minutes of instruction. And then I pause for two reasons. First, so that people can ask questions. But also, it's a little bit of time to just pause and reflect. There's nothing wrong with that for a minute or two. So we can just consider what it is that we've learned. And then we can ask the people can ask the individual questions. And when you're listening back to the archive of that, just makes it much easier rather than the huge cacophony of noise going on throughout the webinar. It makes it easier to learn something. So we have 16 courses, as I say, from the basic kind of subjects like using Word and Outlook. And Word was an interesting one because I not only taught the various functions of how JAWS relates to Word, but also things like how to create accessible documents. We all want accessible documents, but how can we advocate for those with our employer, for example, if we don't know how to produce them ourselves? So that was one of the things in the Word course, using Google Chrome, Facebook, Twitter, Skype, of course, through to audio applications, not wanting to be stereotypical, but a lot of blind people like audio applications. So things like iTunes that you mentioned earlier, Reaper, which is a multi-track recorder or a mixing device, Goldwave, SoundForge. And to end up with, we have a couple of courses which kind of go hand in hand. They're called Catching Up with JAWS. And they are designed to bring people up to date because, of course, people buy JAWS. Sometimes they get the latest update, but sometimes they skip a few updates, perhaps because they can't afford it. And when they do get the latest one, they want to know how to use all these wonderful features that are in the product. So those two courses, they just bring people up to date, probably from around about JAWS 15 or so up to the present.
I think that's a really good idea, by the way, because I spoke to somebody only the other day and we were talking that very scenario, Brian. They had updated, I think, a couple of versions, upgraded a couple of versions, and something came up about, I think it was actually the flexible web feature that we were talking about, and that it had just completely bypassed this person because obviously they had read the what's new in the very latest version of JAWS, but didn't realize that actually this might be a feature that could be useful to them.
Well, that's quite right. And flexible web is something that was in the first one, in the first Catching Up with JAWS. And of course, in the latest one, we've got lots of other little tricks that are hidden away that might not be quite obvious on the surface when you read the what's new. But the other thing is, when you read something like what's new, obviously it is very brief information and you can't quite appreciate how that is going to coexist, if you like, with your regular working environment. So if you're in the workplace, how are you going to use it to enhance your productivity or to fulfill your employment duties? And what I try to do in these courses is to set the JAWS features with real world examples of how you might go about it.
Have you ideas in your head for 2019? Is Harshen Consultancy? I have no doubt we're going to see more courses. Obviously, product updates. Are there other things in the background that may be happening that you can tease us about at all?
Yes. As I mentioned earlier, Skype for Business is something that I'd really like to get into because I think we've got half the technology there already. So I think that's something that definitely could work. And we have been asked for that. So some scripts for that. At the time of recording, the next version of Lisi is in testing. And one of the things that people have asked for a lot is the ability to, when you, for example, get a progress bar in an application, or let's say that you're copying a huge folder from one location to another, there is a progress bar there. They want that indicated through sound. Well, if we're going to do that, we're going to do it properly, as I always try to do. So Lisi is a classy lady, so she will do it using really good quality sounds and things like that.
I've no doubt she will. I know that Lisi is one of those applications, and we said it there a while ago, it's a big challenge to make something that a beginner and an advanced user gets excited about, but I've had conversations on both sides of that spectrum, and everybody is quite excited who has used Lisi. I've no doubt there'll be people who are listening to this podcast who'll want to kind of head over to your website and maybe find out more and hopefully buy some of this stuff. Is it all available online?
Absolutely. Yes, it is. And if people were to visit www.hartgenconsultancy, that's HARTGEN consultancy.com, then they will be able to do that. And if there are any queries at all, there is a contact us link on the website and our phone numbers and that kind of thing. Please feel free to get in touch.
Okay. Brian, it's been great to catch up with you, not just to hear about all the great things that you're doing, but to maybe just get a sense, I suppose one of the things I was very interested in, just the whole process of how it works. And you've kind of given me certainly that information. I've no doubt people will be heading over to hartgenconsultancy.com if you want to find more information. And Brian, I hope you'll stay in touch and that we can catch up with you sometime next year. But for the moment, thanks a million for the chat.
Thank you very much. And can I wish you the very best of endeavours, particularly with your new office in Dublin for Sight and Sound Technology.
Thanks, Brian. We're enjoying it so far, so hopefully it'll stay that way. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much to Brian Hartgen there. Remember, visit www.hartgenconsultancy.com and you can get more information on Lisi, Jay Say and Jay Dictate. And remember those Lisi Bytes and Brian's extensive training courses. I think he said there was 16 available. So loads of stuff there to have a look at. And of course, thanks to Matt Payton, a great guy who gave me some time on a Thursday morning just after Sight Village. I have to say to you, by the way, we were both wrecked. So we do this for the love of the podcast, by the way. That's just about it. Join us soon when Jenny Axler will definitely be with us to talk all things Braille and hymns. I'm really looking forward to that. For now though, from Stuart Lawler, take care, thanks for listening, and goodbye.